Vegas Bad Boy of Podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guest. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast. Vegas Bad Boys Podcast presents Matt Michaels, People I Don't Hate.
You got Matt Michaels here, you got Sin City Steve here, and we are with the golden voice of our wrestling youth, and that is Mr. Gary Michael Capetta. How you doing today, Gary?
I'm doing really well. Thanks a lot for the invite. I appreciate it.
And thank you for coming on the show. I know we'd gone back and forth a little bit, and I am so excited because when I was a kid and I'm growing up and you associate certain things, like I grew up in Chicago, so Harry Carey to me was my grandpa, right? You know, you'd listen to him every day. You'd hear those goofy stories and stuff. And so you got that feeling. And when it came to wrestling, your voice was always my, you know, kind of my my weekend voice. You know, it made me feel good because now I got to watch wrestling. And now things were, you know, good. It was the weekend. I'm out of school. And I got wrestling on my TV. How does it feel to have such a legacy in a business that has been, you know, really just something that television has brought an exposure to, that guys like you are the ones who really have created what wrestling is today?
Well, you know, at the time when you're doing it, you don't think of that at all. It's not, you're there to do to do a job, to do a performance, and you go out and you do it, and you have no idea how you're coming across, how you're affecting people. Even with the role that I played, which of all of the speakers in a wrestling program, your ring announcer reveals the least about themselves personally.
Right.
And it's kind of amazing how people create their own image as to who you are.
Yeah.
And it's very different from a live performance, because even when it was a Clash of the Champions or a weekly television show, whether it was WWF, AWA, WCW, Ring of Honor, I'm interacting with the folks that are there. And when, for instance, when I started with Jim Crockett Promotions in Baltimore, that was a monthly gig. So, yeah, I mean, the people got to know me. I mean, that was not TV. They were just live NWA shows. So that made sense to me. That I could understand, because I have much more of a personality than one would guess by just watching a show where you're just seeing and hearing me ring announced.
Right.
I think that when I was with WCW, the first time that it really hit me, to get to the core of your question, is when we traveled in Europe.
Okay.
And once again, you knew that it was being broadcast all over the world, but until you go and you visit and you perform in front of an international, let's say a UK crowd, you know, where they're yelling, Gotti, Gotti, it doesn't hit you until that happens. It's pretty cool. I feel very blessed to have had the career that I've had.
Were you still working as a teacher while you were doing the ring announcing?
For all of my WWF years, so I was with WWF for 11 years, yes.
Okay.
And for the times that I did the AWA stuff, yes. when I started working with, and when I did the NWA stuff, yes. But when I started working with WCW, which would have been 1989, I was traveling full-time with them. So I actually took a leave of absence for the first year and then just continued. I had a also had an enjoyable teaching career, and there is one particular school that I taught at where I resigned several times, and they hired me back several times, like four or five times.
Wow.
And it just so happened that when I came off the road and I didn't have any announcing commitments, that they had a need for an educator. And when I left there, I taught Spanish, so I was in the World Language Department, and I was at a school called Christian Brothers Academy in New Jersey. And when I left there, I left as head of the chair of the department.
Wow.
So I didn't even have to spend all those consecutive years there, you know, dipping in and out. And they liked my work. I loved the school. And so that just seemed to work. It was just happenstance. So it wasn't until I started with WCW that I stopped teaching.
Were the students...
And then I went back later, after my stint with WCW.
Were the students aware that you were involved in wrestling?
Oh, sure. When I was with WWF, I was on every Saturday night in the local markets.
Right.
And yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm. And they do. So I guess my question then is, what did you bring as a teacher to those kids that made you, someone who, like you said, you were able to kind of get hired back in. Obviously, you were doing something right. And was there any crossover being a teacher that you saw yourself having to bring on the road to when you're dealing with some of the guys in the travels?
Well, I guess entertainment. not everybody learns the same way.
Right.
So while I was by no means a soft touch as a teacher, I early on had introduced all kinds of multimedia approaches to teaching the Spanish language.
Huh.
It's one of the reasons that I created the stage show, because not everybody's a reader. So the stage show gives me an opportunity to communicate things that I've witnessed and my perspectives on the sport of pro wrestling without you having to read it in a book. I'm delivering it to you, and I'm educating and entertaining you at the same time.
Right.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
So I think it's a crossover, because, I mean, I come across just naturally as a very, like, serious kind of, you would say, teacher-like kind of person. And I think that made me valuable, especially in the early years of my broadcasting career, because I was short, I was serious, and even though that wasn't going on, like, the seriousness wasn't in my brain, it's just how I come across. And it gave all of the wrestlers around me a crazier look, because there's a huge contrast.
Most definitely. And now you had mentioned both your stage show, but also the book, your autobiography, Body Slam's Memoirs of a Wrestling Pitchman, has received rave reviews all over the internet. One thing that really stood out for me was that you didn't seem to cater to your own ego, as is the case with a lot of books written by people involved in the professional wrestling industry. In addition, there was a second edition released where there were 10 additional years factored in. So I've got to ask, was there anything left out of that second edition of the book that you wish that you had added in?
When ECW Press took over the rights of the book, when they approached me, I said to them, I want to add to it. And mm-hmm. There's nothing vindictive in the book, but it's truthful. So in body slams, when there was something negative, I just, and 90%, more than 90% of what's in the book is what I'd witnessed. So we're not talking like secondhand stories. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, there were people who didn't like how they were portrayed. And one of the additions to the current ECW Press book is I went to different people who had a problem with something that I put in the book, and I gave them an opportunity to respond. And I said to them, you'll have the last word. Like, I will say nothing more. I guess two of the more notables that did that were Mick Foley and Jim Cornette. You know, so I gave them that opportunity. I thought that made it interesting. It also, the second edition gave me an opportunity to add Ring of Honor, because the when the first book came out, I had not done any, you know, Ring of Honor wasn't even in existence. And so I had, I don't know whether you're aware, but I had done the backstage interviewing at Ring of Honor for a few years. Had a great time doing it. And so it allowed me to add on to the story and to allow people that I spoke about earlier in the book to respond.
Very cool. And so obviously we had mentioned the live stage show, which brought your book to life before the fans, before the eyes of fans that were in attendance. Are there any plans to do any more live shows, or maybe a follow-up book?
I won't do a follow-up book. I may write another book, but it won't. It's not necessarily going to be a wrestling book. Mm-hmm. The stage. I'm always open to doing more of the stage shows. I traveled for. Actually, a lot of people don't realize. Mine was the first, because I had done the first performances back in 2002. And then I brought it back to life, you know, within the last few years. And I was on the road for 2 years with it. I'm open. There's a promoter in upstate New York who's spoken to me about bringing it up. It's just a matter of, at this point, promoters reaching out and you know, we'll talk about it, and hopefully I'd be able to bring it to their part of the country or part of the world, wherever we go.
Did you have any type of stage performance training when you were younger? Were you involved in like theater or any type of acting or public speaking that kind of led you into the pathway? And you know, a lot of people are nervous to, you know, create their own show and go ahead and do a full stage show. So is that part of you know, some of your training when you were a youth, or is it just something that just came out of the organicness of writing a book and then doing a stage show?
Zero. Had zero training. I'm just nuts. I'm just crazy. You know, when I first started to announce, I had no intention. I didn't have my eyes set on any kind of a career in broadcasting. I was just at a wrestling show, and they didn't have an announcer, and I volunteered, and that was how I got started. They told me to come back the next week and, you know, wear something presentable to get in the ring, and that was 40 years ago. So, yeah, I mean, I just learned by doing, and, you know, it was just in the middle of the ring that contains, you know, the activity that I always loved as a kid. So I was just very fortunate because my first time's like stumbling into a ring, I couldn't figure out how to get into the ring. I was the bottom two ropes, or I wasn't going to fly over the top rope. That's for damn sure. So, you know, no, I have absolutely no training. It just seems I'm the kind of person where I have no problem standing in front of 20,000 people and communicating something, or knowing that I'm being captured by millions. But if you and I were to go down to the Burger King and sit across from each other, I would have difficulty in coming up with conversation. I couldn't sell you anything. Let me put it that way. Yet I can sell you a whole bunch of nonsense in front of, you know, throngs of people.
Right.
But I couldn't sell you my car. Forget it. there's something psychological about that, but I've never explored it.
Well, you know, and that's fascinating too, because of the fact that you're a teacher as well. So even a small group of people you can talk to and communicate to, but yeah, if you're just one-on-one, that's fascinating that that's a little more difficult for you. You said, you know, going into wrestling, it was something that you liked, you know, already in your life. Who were some of your favorites watching growing up?
Well, Bruno Sammartino was my main guy.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, he was the first one to capture my imagination, largely through his interviews. When he would look at me as I sat on the floor of my living room and told me that he needed for me to come down to the arena that weekend to support him, because if I didn't, it's more likely he would lose his title. I believed him. I believe that if I wasn't there, I didn't want to get blamed for Bruno losing his title. I'm in sixth grade, you know, and I'm buying this hook, line, and sinker. So Bruno was he was the main guy that I that brought me to the dance.
Did you ever get a chance to see him wrestle when you were a kid live?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. From, I guess I was in middle school. It was the first time I was ever brought to a wrestling show. And, yeah, I mean, I would go, maybe five times a year.
Yeah.
My parents would, you know, drop me and my cousin off to at an armory or at a convention center. Sure. In fact, the reason that I was at ringside the night that I volunteered to announce, because they didn't have an announcer, I was at ringside because I had a press pass. I went into New York City to Ring Wrestling Magazine and convinced them to give me a press pass so I could get in for free. So so that was March, and in July of that same year, I started announcing. So I only wrote a few articles.
Wow, that is brilliant. Did those early days of you starting out, was it still for you exciting and thrilling? And is it still for you exciting and thrilling to just get to watch wrestling?
It was exciting and thrilling. I mean, the first night that I stepped into the ring to announce, the main event that night was my hero, Bruno Sammartino.
Wow.
So, who I befriended over the years, which was a blessing unto itself. You know, you figure, to ever meet your childhood hero and then for him to, like, you know you, know about your family, become a friend was mind-blowing. It was just mind-blowing. Now, do I get super excited when I watch wrestling now? Not really. You know, when you can never go back. When you become a performer, whenever you watch the product in the future, you have a certain, like, critical eye.
Yeah.
That you can't divorce yourself from. So I'm appreciating the product, but maybe in a different way.
Right.
But one of the things that I tell young, whether it be announcers or wrestlers that come up and ask me for advice, is never forget how you felt when you were a fan sitting in the cheap seats.
Yeah.
Because you as a performer have to hit those same emotional strings in order for you to be successful.
Yeah.
And that could mean as a wrestler to get the people to cheer for you, to get the people to hate you, you know, whatever it is, whichever emotion that you want to draw from them. Remember how it felt when you were sitting in the cheap seats. Never forget that.
That's
a great philosophy to have.
Yeah.
And it really kind of puts everything in a perspective. And so kind of along those same lines, how do you feel about the resurgence of independent wrestling here in the United States, especially over the last few years?
I'm a huge supporter of indie wrestling. I go whenever I can. Mm-hmm. I go whenever I need to. And when I say that is, like, yeah, every once in a while, I just feel the need to taste the atmosphere. And I'll go, and I'll buy a ticket. And once again, I'll go back up to those cheap seats. And, you know, and all in. Now, when I started, there was no independent wrestling.
Right.
Like, in this area where I live, in the Northeast, it was just the McMahons. It was just the WWF. Yeah, there were minor insurgents that would come in, but they would never last.
Right.
You just have to be, do your homework to know what you're going to see, because there are a lot of pretenders out there, and you sort of don't want to waste your time and money with that. But
without a doubt.
Yeah, I mean, once you get past that, there's a lot of great talent out there.
Yeah. Speaking of current talent, are there any current talents that you individually look at and you say, you know, that guy's got it. I need to see him on a bigger stage.
You know, the guys that I've thought that about have recently risen to a larger stage. I had gone to an independent wrestling show in southern New Jersey at a an industrial park is what it was. And the wrestling promotion had rented this stall. And I don't know whether they had a wrestling school attached to it or they just did their wrestling shows there. So I went one night, and they were, as usual, which shouldn't be, but as usual, they were late getting started. So I was standing outside, and I was waiting, and this guy comes up to me. I had no idea. You know, I just figured he's another fan. And he started talking to me, and he was very complimentary. And he showed a really good knowledge of old school wrestling. And who was it? As it turns out, is MJF.
Wow.
Very respectful of the history of wrestling. And I've seen him now several times at conventions. And you could see early on that he had the makings. Another guy, and this has more to do with his wrestling skill, his wrestling technique, is a guy that I believe he's probably still in Ring of Honor, Hot Sauce. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Tracy? Is it Tracy Williams?
Yes.
What a wrestler he is. He's
He's great.
He's an artist. I saw him. Also at an independent wrestling show for the first time. There's a guy who wrestles for a few different promotions, but the oldest. Here's a trivia question for you: what is the oldest wrestling promotion, like ongoing wrestling promotion, that has never stopped producing shows? Goes back to the 60s.
Wow, 60s.
Boy. In my area, sort of.
Wow.
Yeah.
You've got,
You've got me.
ECWA. who had started the Super 8 tournament.
Wow.
You know, and when you look at the rosters of, like, who wrestled in those Super 8 tournaments through the years, Jim Kettner had started that in Delaware. Anyway, mm-hmm. I went to an ECWA wrestling show about a month ago, and there was a guy, his name is Eric Martin, and I saw some real good stuff from him.
Wow.
Yeah. So
definitely have to do some research on him for sure.
Richard Holiday, who I guess is with MLW.
Yeah.
I had been up to, he was trained up in Connecticut, and I went up there to do a guest ring announce appearance because there was a promoter who scammed this charity. They ran this wrestling show. The charity never got the money. So Richard Holiday's promotion, Mario Mancini and, oh, name's not coming to me, but he was one of the Four Horsemen at one time.
Paul Roma?
Paul Roma, his school. They went to the charity and they said that we feel really badly about this. This gives wrestling a bad name. We want to do it with you. You will profit. When I heard that they did this, I thought it was a great gesture. I got in touch with Paul and I said, I'd like to come up and I'll do a guest ring announcing for you. Maybe we can draw a few more people. A whole point of me telling you the background was I had met Richard Holiday up there and I saw terrific potential. I just saw him at the Bobby Eaton celebration of Bobby Eaton's career in Knoxville.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how Richard has grown. His presence, when he picks up the mic and he talks to the people, it's like so polished and professional compared to, you know, when he was training and I saw him just a few years ago, I met him just a few years ago.
Right.
Yeah, so there's a lot of terrific talent out there.
What in your eyes is something that you've seen, maybe in someone that you have been around working with, or, you know, someone that might have what is essentially that it factor. Is there something that you could put your finger on and go, you know, if you look at someone and say, ah, yes, this is what I see. What are you looking for through your eyes as someone who's been watching wrestling for as long as you have?
Bring me in, get my attention, entertain me, and make it so that I don't go away unless you want me to go away.
Wow. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
And that's not just with wrestling. That's with, you know, any entertainment form.
Right.
You know, grab me. And it's not just with any one kind of wrestling style, and it's not just with any one kind of wrestling character. It's, you know, it just applies to talent that you've been blessed with and that you've had the experience so that you know how to use it. I mean, it took me 7 years before I felt like I hit my stride and I felt in fully control of what I was doing as an announcer. 7 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you think, with that philosophy, and as you said that, is that something that also, as people, that's kind of how we make our choices? Like, you can say that about food, too. If there's something that catches your taste buds, that's something that you stick with or like, but then there's other things that, you know, Steve here might find that is explosively good in his taste buds. For me, it's like, oh man, nah, that's not my style.
That's right. That's why you need a variety.
Yeah.
You need a variety of styles. One mistake that I think is that gets made is too often I'll watch an event and match after match after match, wrestler after wrestler after wrestler has the same style.
Yeah.
Yep.
And think about going to a concert and hearing the same song over and over and over again.
Yep.
It gets old. It gets old. And I understand why they do what they're doing, but enough with all of the just using kicks and strikes and dives.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If I was a promoter on the indie circuit, there would be a good number of wrestlers who would never, ever want to work for me. Because, like, there are certain things that you don't do in order to have a successful total experience. Not just a match should tell a story and build, but an entire event should.
Right.
And what that means is, that means that the first couple of matches are not on par with your main event.
Right.
Yeah.
I've watched a couple of Ring of Honor. This was about a year and a half ago or so. Ring of Honor pay-per-views. And I remember watching, watching the show. The main event happened. And at the end, I'm saying to myself, boy, that was a good match. But I'm not over the moon about this because I saw that match 2 hours ago.
Right.
I saw many of the same moves 2 hours ago. And there should be certain moves, and I think WWE probably does this better. One of the things they do better is there should be certain moves that are the moves of certain wrestlers.
Right.
Not everybody should be doing them.
Right.
I mean, they should be identified in a certain way. So therefore, I would, for instance, I would tell wrestlers, if I'm talking about an indie show, you don't leave the ring. During your match, you don't dive out of the ring, you don't throw your guy out, you stay in the ring, you wrestle. Now, I think that the other philosophy is, you give the people as much as you can give them from opening bell to the end of the last match. And that is more acceptable today.
Right.
But I don't think that when you go to see a movie that you see the culminating fight scene in the first 3 minutes.
Right.
There's a reason. It's not that you're shortchanging your audience. You're building and heightening the emotion so that the people get much more of a payoff at the end. And everybody has a role to play in that. So that if you're a supporting player, that's what you are. You don't do superstar moves.
Do you think that,
so true.
Do you think that as an educator that you can identify kind of that philosophy in the fact that the kids today are not necessarily being trained the same as, you know, we were being trained, you know, 20 years ago, 30, 40 years ago. And is it also one of those things where a promoter nowadays, it's so much easier to slap together some money and call yourself a promotion and actually not be educated on how to promote and book as compared to the, you know, the people who, you know, had 20, 30, 40 years of experience doing it.
Well, I think there's truth to both of those things. But when I tell you that if I go to see a wrestling event and I see the same essentially match or the same moves over and over and over again for the entire night, and there's something wrong with that, I don't think it takes a genius to figure that out. I just think you need to be a thinking human being.
Yeah, which raises the question, then, why do
they... You don't even, be a human being. You just have to think.
Yeah.
Right.
I know. It just, it raises a great question of why are there so many, you know, promotions that do that, even on the, you know, the top levels. Sometimes you see something and you go, eh, I just saw that. And then that makes for your popcorn match sometimes where you're just like, okay, I'm up and I'm going to go get some popcorn because I'm just not interested right now.
You see, that's very interesting that you phrase it that way. That was excellent because it's up to me as the person that crafts the evening to dictate to you when the popcorn match is.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
You know, yeah, you don't have to be a human being. I can take my dog, Harry, and I can have her do the same trick over and over again. And at a certain point, she's just going to shrug and walk away from me. She's going to be bored.
That's so true. So true. And actually, you had mentioned in the past that it would benefit WWE to have a product with a bit more of an edge. Do you feel as if they're working toward that finally?
That's interesting because, well, I don't know when I said that or what their product was like at the time.
It was, it was in an interview that you did with Title Match, I believe.
Right. Like yeah. What I'm saying is I don't know what year that was.
Gotcha.
I don't think it would matter because I sort of don't believe anything that they do right now.
I laugh because I identify completely with that statement.
I tune in. I'm faithful. I tune in every Monday and Friday, most times.
Yep.
And more recently, they don't keep me as, you know, they don't keep me. But, I mean, these guys, we're not even talking about seeing the same moves over and over again for an event. They're mm-hmm. running the same versions of a match for months.
Yeah.
You really yeah. think you're going to keep me tuning in to see Kevin Owens and the Monday Night Messiah? I mean, how many weeks in a row is this going to happen?
Oh, yeah.
So, it's you know, in a way.
Are you watching NXT, and can you see the difference with the NXT product?
You know, when I spend some of my time in New Jersey, some of my time in Florida. When I'm in Florida, I do because I get the West Coast feed.
Right.
Here, I can't even record, so I choose to watch AEW live, and I therefore don't get a chance to see NXT.
And what's your thoughts on AEW and what they've been able to accomplish so far?
I think they're beginning to gel.
Yeah.
You know, when they did the episode on the cruise, that was one of my favorite episodes because they were, if you go back and look at that episode, and I think it was because of the proximity of the audience to the ring, they kept action in the ring. There was very little lying. And you know what? Those guys were terrific wrestlers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that they don't know how. It's the one word. Uh-oh, you're gonna set me on a rant, but I'll try to contain myself. Impatience. Impatience is the word that covers the ills that I see in today's product. Now, I should preface this by saying I'm not an old guy who says old school wrestling was always great, everything was terrific, and today's stuff is not. It's crap. I don't think that at all. I have huge respect for today's wrestlers. What I think the problem is impatience. If the performers don't hear a reaction every 90 seconds, they think that they're losing the audience. So therefore, they do one high spot after another for a short-term return.
Right.
Short-term. Mm-hmm. But that's not building a match. that's making things illogical. I think, and then when I saw them wrestle, because they had to wrestle, I'm saying to myself, why in the world are they taking all these shortcuts?
Right.
But I've seen more so in the last few weeks that there's less illogic in their work and a little bit more wrestling. And if that continues, you know, then I'll continue to like it.
Yeah.
I watch AEW and not NXT because I think because I get a sense of unpredictability in the one and not in the other.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
I'm saying that there's that one, you know, for what they're crafting in each case, that one's less or more predictable than the other. It's just what they're, it's how they're communicating it. It's just they're making me feel like this is a little edgier, this is a little less contained and prepackaged.
Is that something that you feel, because when I think about that edginess, I think of the word danger. And I look at, let's say, someone like a Lenny Bruce, you know, where you have good comedians like Richard Pryor, George Carlin, that just had that edge. But then you look at someone like Tim Allen, who with the rah, 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 you know, type of humor is very, you know, put him on TV, put him mainstream, Americans tune in, and you know, there you go. You have your comfort food right there. But with the edginess, it like that draws you in. It's unpredictability. I think that's like guys like you know, Bruiser Brody was so fascinating to watch because you never knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, Terry Funk too.
Yes. Out. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but when you talk about someone like a comedian like a Lenny Bruce or George Carlin, those performances were crafted.
Right.
It's the same difference. Okay, if you want to compare stand-up comedy to pro wrestling, it's those comedians that are also impatient because they can't deal with the silence that takes place in telling a story, so they lace their stories with F-bombs.
Right.
That make people uncomfortable, and therefore you hear them responding in some way. That's the same thing as the impatience of a wrestler who has to do some kind of a big impact move and not work a body part because he needs that response too.
That
I think
sense.
That's the corollary I would make.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Very true. So, really quick, Jerry.
Forever.
Okay.
This is getting off the topic, but you get back to your question in a second. Do you guys know who Orson Bean is?
Orson Bean, yes. Yeah.
Right? Orson Bean died last week?
Yeah, he in Santa Monica. He got hit by that car. Yep.
He got hit by two cars. Orson Bean was 91. For the folks that are listening and don't know who Orson Bean is, Orson Bean was an actor. He was a comedian. He appeared on a lot of 1960s, 1970s talk shows and game shows.
Yep.
And he had a terrific wit. And I'm reading his obituary, and I'm thinking to myself, he's probably up in heaven, and he's laughing at this, that I made it through 91 years, and what it took to take me down was crossing the street. Crossing the street, hit by two cars. Just the fact that at 91 he's out on his own and he's, you know, walking around is kind of amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sorry, I that was totally unrelated. You can cut that out.
No, but you know what? It's a great point because, you know, what's interesting about that is Orson Bean had, you know, such a long, lengthy career, but he was really beloved in the Los Angeles theater community over the last 30 years or so. And this was something that hit a lot of my friends and myself kind of hard because there were so many people who had interacted with him, had, you know, come across him in the city, in the working, in the theaters. And, you know, it's so sad, but yet you just found one great lining, because you're absolutely right. He's the kind of guy who would have looked at this and gone, you know, out of all the things I've done in my life, crossing the street killed me.
Yeah, the last thing I did in my life. I've been so smart for 91 years. And in the last 5 seconds of my 91st year, and boy, did I fuck up.
Oh, man. All right, Steve, back to your question. What was it?
No, so I was actually I was going to get to something that was off topic as well. So obviously we know you from, you know, your voice in the ring. You've been a teacher, and you've actually been a part of a video game, all that kind of stuff. What is something that someone listening to this show would be completely surprised to know about Gary Michael Capetta?
Wow. Actually, because of body slams, my life is an open book. I honestly, I don't have an answer to that question. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Because I am kind of, when it comes to entertainment, I can go over the edge, but when it comes to, like what I think about things socially and politically, I'm kind of conservative, and I think you would expect that from mm-hmm. me. There is a crazy side to me. Well, I'm the world's most dangerous announcer, so what do you expect?
I did hear that, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's much that you wouldn't know, but you know, that would surprise you. I've done so many interviews, and I've done so many stage shows, and I've been in the public mm-hmm. eye for 40 years with,
yeah.
you know, newspaper articles and so forth, that I think it's pretty much all out there.
All right. Well, so you were inducted in 2019 to the New England Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. Congratulations on that honor, by the way. Do you see another Hall of Fame induction upcoming for yourself, possibly?
No.
No?
I never think that. I never think that. The folks down in Tennessee were really kind to induct me into the Mid-South Hall of Fame. And then mm-hmm. last year was the New England Hall of Fame. No, like I said up top, I just look at my announcing career as, you know, I did a job to the best of my ability, and I don't see it any differently, you know, from like an accountant that goes in and does his job to the best of his ability. So I don't place any kind of extraordinary importance on it.
Is there...
Boy, did I disappoint you. I didn't mean to depress you guys.
Well, no,
It'll happen soon enough.
Yeah. Exactly. Is there another sport that you absolutely are into, or is, you know, wrestling something that you mainly focused on growing up and never really got into another sport?
The sport of politics. The sport that's more fake and dirtier. No, I'm really not into much else, as you know, as far as the world of sports goes.
I love that analogy, though, because you know, being in Las Vegas, we have right now when we're recording this, the primary's coming up here in Vegas. I got a chance to go out and see some of the candidates speak because I'm fascinated by that. And you can tell when there are moments of sincerity and when there are moments of pure bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cottage industry. 4 years ago, I drove up to New Hampshire the week leading up to their primary. And even though I spent a couple of hours in line each time that I wanted, you know, to get in to see a candidate, I would have never voted for the people that I went to see. But I liked going and watching the people.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty interesting. And I know this is going to put a timestamp on this interview, but it was in your great state of Nevada where those ladies jumped up on stage, took off their tops, and poured milk on their breasts.
Yep.
Did you see that Sunday?
Yep.
Yep.
So I don't, you know, for all of the put downs that New Jersey gets, you're not going to see that. You have to go to Vegas. You have to go to I think it was Carson City, maybe.
I think it was, yeah. But
that's the sport that is. It's unpredictable. It's fascinating, and it doesn't matter whether they're Democrats or Republicans. Independents. Socialists. It's just a fascinating, never ending rollout of storylines.
Yeah, yeah, and it's, you know. Really, it's comparable to the WWE because it's, you know, bankrolled by money and the millionaires or billionaires behind, you know, giving people money to perform and say what they want them to say.
Yeah, that's an interesting that's interesting. Never thought of that.
Well, that's my one contribution for the day. I'm golden. out of all your travels, what's the best type of food that you've experienced?
Because when I was doing most of my traveling, I was with WCW, and part of my role was handling the music. I would have to get to the arenas early, and therefore I was never able to get out to restaurants at dinner time. And then by the time the show was over and I would go and, you know, collect the music, restaurants were closed.
Yeah.
I never had like a great sampling of, as much as I, you know, enjoy going out to dinner as much as the next guy. I never had that opportunity.
So you were stuck with catering, basically.
Well, I was talking about live events where there was no catering. I was left without any food.
Wow! So, wow!
Yeah.
Damn!
Wow.
If there was a 24-hour, this is so boring. But if there was a 24-hour supermarket, I'd go in and, you know, pick up stuff to chomp on back at the hotel room, or, you know, that's pretty much, or if there was a Denny's or a Waffle House or a diner. So I really didn't get an opportunity to test all of the different cuisines. But if you are traveling, I do have one recommendation. I know this more like for lunch. If you're traveling, try not to go to a brand name chain.
Yeah.
Drive another 5 or 7 miles away from the exit and go to a mom and pop place to eat. You'll have better food, quality, and value. Yep. And you also get to, you know, check out the, you know, the locals.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, and just in talking to you, what I really like about that answer is what you've said here about just seeing people and just observing people and what they do, whether it be the people going to these political rallies or someone in a mom and pop diner. I love the fact that you're observant to the humankind around you. And that's something that I think a lot of people miss nowadays, is just being observant. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the other thing that I learned, just, you know, by traveling at least across this country, is this is what a beautiful country this is.
Yeah.
You know, I had never traveled extensively as I did, you know, when I was on the road. I was on the road like 200 nights a year. And, yeah, and I would, and then you just can't get annoyed by certain things. I don't know that I would be able to do what I did today, because what I did was before 9/11.
Right.
So you were able to drive up to an airport 40 minutes before your flight was supposed to take off, drop off your rental car, you know, and get to your gate. I don't know that I'd have the patience that you would need, but even with canceled flights or whatever, I would bring a book of cryptograms with me.
Oh, wow.
And I would just, you know, just, that's what I would do. This was before we had computers that we carried around, or I don't have a smartphone, but before they had smartphones. And that's how, and I would just, because whenever that would happen, I mean, there's no sense in getting upset just so you're where you're supposed to be when you were supposed to be there. You can't be faulted. And there was only one time in all of my years that I didn't make a show. And that was because I was doing studio work in Atlanta, and they asked me not to go to the show. So other than that, regardless of how flights were rerouted or what you had to do to get there, having automobile accidents on the way, it didn't matter. I always, thank God, I always made it.
Well,
wow.
I think that, you know, one of the words that you just used again, and I think that this is just such a great learning experience for anyone who is listening, is patience. And I think that we've lost a lot of patience, whether it's how we consume our entertainment or, you know, rushing along, trying to get here to there, and our storytelling. You know, you're right. It's patience that really, you know, helps bring out and create great storytelling.
Right. Which is why, and you know, sometimes it just comes across as being phony, but it's why when you like tune into these political debates, they'll tell a story about someone that they met on the campaign trail.
Yeah.
And it works, you know, it helps connect. It's why at the State of the Union address, and every president has done it in modern times, like they'll bring guests in and tell their stories.
Yep.
It's just a slice of American life.
Yep.
Much more effective than if they were to tell you about it. Look, this is the person. This is what they went through. You know, this is what we should celebrate. That
right.
Kind of thing.
And then the, you know, the funny thing is when you watch the them try to talk actual policy, that's when you know when things are fake, because it's easier to tell the story about, you know, and show the person and here's John and his struggle, and, you know, and we as Americans, we all feel this, we all sympathize with this. Oh, how am I going to fix roads in this country? Well, you know, I'm going to improve them. It's like, come on.
Yeah, you know, if you're a logical booker in wrestling, and you know, in a creative way, it very much will take you to the next episode.
Yeah.
If it's done well and you understand the human experience and how people react and respond, whether that be in a positive way or in a negative way, the next chapter is written for you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You just follow the logic.
Yep. And in this day and age, I think that's great advice with anything. Follow the logic.
That's, you know, that's if when I talk to younger wrestlers, and they'll, that's another thing. Like over the years, I've had guys who are breaking into the business who have come up to me and I've sat down and talked to them, and they have, it's just wonderful to see that they wind up having a career, you know, and become known. And what I would say is, whatever you do, remember that the whole, and it's just amazing to me that this even has to be said, that has to be stated, that the whole idea of this sport is you have two people or two teams that enter a ring, and the idea is to beat them, which yep. means either make them give up or have them pin. If what you do in the course of that process goes toward having someone be pinned or give up, then you'll be okay. It's logical.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're saying, like, I don't understand, like, why is he making that point? I don't understand things like this, and I don't know the correct technical term for this move. But when a guy goes to the top turnbuckle and he faces inside the ring and he flips backwards onto the floor, that's just stupid. Like, that's you wouldn't do that in a contest, in a real contest.
Right.
It's just,
right.
And if I'm standing outside the ring, how many seconds am I going to stand there and wait for you to lunge yourself at me? I'm going to, and I think, oh boy, I forget who Cody was wrestling. This was months ago. In fact, I think it was maybe where Cody got the gash on his head. Whoever he was wrestling just stepped aside. It just made so much sense to me. It's
Wasn't that Jericho?
I think it could have been.
I think it was Jericho.
Yeah.
So, logic. Use logic. If it's not logical, it doesn't belong in. It doesn't belong in the activity. It just doesn't. Even if what you do is logical and it misses, even if what you do is logical and it's, even if it's sloppy, a fight is not ballet. I mean, it's not gymnastics. It's not pretty.
Yep. Yeah, that's so true. And that goes with the greediness and the, you know, and making it look real and feel real. And, you know, maybe it's just that we're so desensitized now. We want everything so quick that the audiences, you know, love to see fast, fast, fast. But I'll tell you, when you watch something that is slowed down just a bit and the logical steps are taken, it just reads so much better and is so much more enjoyable overall.
Here's another thing that amazed me. A few months ago, see if you remember this story. It had to do with Sami Zayn managing, and one of the fans, I'm guessing that he called him a fag. I'm guessing. They weren't, it was a derogatory word for a homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
And Sammy really is offended by this.
Yeah.
And he attempts to counsel the guy at ringside. You know, like, this is not something you should say. You know, this is, and I'm saying to myself, I think Sammy should be proud that he hit something in this guy that brought out his homophobia.
Right.
You know, finally we get somebody who digs in and gets a gut reaction where it's so difficult to do today.
Yep.
And the performer is he doesn't like that.
That's so true.
Like, how perverted is that? I mean, that's so perverted. From he spends week after week, night after night, harassing the people.
Yeah.
And when he thinks the guy to respond from the depths of his gut, he has a problem with it. I don't know. sort of like a comedian on stage, and when someone laughs, they say, what are you laughing about?
Right, exactly.
What are you supposed to be doing, Sammy?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point out. And I think that anyone listening, just, you know, if you're trying to wrestle, or if you're trying to, you know, be a writer, or if you're trying to do anything in entertainment, listen to some of the advice that you got today, because you know what? This is exactly the type of things that will help you become a performer who has a career. And that's the biggest thing. You always want to have a career as a performer, and not just a couple good years, you know, have a life.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, let's get to wrapping up. And I mean, Gary, it's been so much fun talking with you, man. I really was looking forward to this, because
without a doubt,
yeah, you've been someone who has been, you know, in my life for so many years. And it's also fun now to be able to go back on the network and, you know, hear your introductions, and just be taken back to, you know, a point in my life where things were a lot easier.
Yeah, I think I wasn't watching WWE at the time, but The Rock used to say, know your role.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I think for all aspiring ring announcers, you need to know your role. Like, until I started doing my stage show, no one ever paid to attend a wrestling show because I was there.
Right.
That never happened. They never tuned in on a Saturday night to watch wrestling, and it's like, oh, Gary Rutherford has the ring announcer. Well, I'm not watching. No way. But those promoters throughout my career, who I'm indebted to, were able to recognize what I did bring to the table. And I appreciate that, because it's only, I'm more successful when you recognize what I did when you're driving home from the event.
Yeah.
Than in the moment.
Yeah.
And I'm patient. I can wait.
Well, on that note, Gary, it's been great talking to you. And Vince McMahon, if you're listening, Hall of Fame. I'll say it. Hall of Fame.
Definitely. And Gary, if you would, if people want to keep in touch with you, what are your social media handles?
You can find me at on Facebook at GMC4Real. My initials, GMC, the number 4Real. And on Twitter, it's Gary Capetta. GMC for Real on Facebook, Gary Capetta on both Twitter and Instagram.
Excellent. Perfect. There you have it, Gary Michael Capetta. Thank you so much.
Bad Boys of Podcasting.